This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. A few months from now, parents will dispatch their kids off to summer camp. Meg Wolitzer's new novel, The Interestings, begins in that transformative time and place at Spirit in the Woods, a very artsy camp in the Berkshire Hills of Massachusetts. It's the summer of 1974. Six teenagers meet and become close friends, unified by the belief that they can do and be anything. An actor, a director, a dancer, a musician, an animator. And the author, Meg Wolitzer, is here with me right now. Meg, before we talk, will you read from The Interestings, maybe the beginning where the characters are teenagers and have just met?
I certainly will. On a warm night in early July of that long evaporated year, The Interestings gathered for the very first time. They were only 15, 16, and they began to call themselves the name with tentative irony. Julie Jacobson, an outsider and possibly even a freak, had been invited in for obscure reasons, and now she sat in a corner on the unswept floor and attempted to position herself so she would appear unobtrusive, yet not pathetic, which was a difficult balance. Irony was new to her and tasted oddly good, like a previously unavailable summer fruit. Soon she and the rest of them would be ironic much of the time, unable to answer an innocent question without giving their words a snide little adjustment. Fairly soon after that, the snideness would soften, the irony would be mixed in with seriousness, and the years would shorten and fly. Then it wouldn't be long before they all found themselves shocked and sad to be fully grown into their thicker, finalized adult selves, with almost no chance for reinvention. That night, though, long before the shock and the sadness and the permanence, as they sat in Boys' Teepee 3, their clothes bakery sweet from the very last washer-dryer loads at home, Ash Wolf said, "Every summer we sit here like this, we should call ourselves something." "Why," said Goodman, her older brother, "so the world can know just how unbelievably interesting we are?" "We could be called the unbelievably interesting ones," said Ethan Figman. "How's that?" "The interesting," said Ash. "That works."
That is Meg Wolitzer reading from her new novel, The Interestings. It is true, I think, that all smart teenagers in the last 40 or 50 years come to a point where they believe they've invented irony.
Yes, definitely. These kids are no different than that.
You open the book with the group of characters, the characters in the book, as teenage friends at this performing arts camp called Spirit in the Woods, which is the precious kind of place where they perform Samuel Beckett plays. Why start at a summer camp and why in the summer of 1974?
Well, I myself went to a camp that was not dissimilar. But I want to say that the characters are not at all based on the people I knew. I really do like invention. It's something that I love to do. I started it there because this summer was just so extraordinary for me. I grew up on Long Island in Syosset, and all, otherwise known by its Native American name, Exit 43. And these kids all lived in the city. And I didn't even really understand that living in the city was something sort of enviable until I really went there and slept on the floors of these apartments and walked around and had a kind of freedom that I'd never felt before, looked at art, did things like that that just woke me up. It was kind of like smelling salts under my nose.
So this camp experience of yours, was there a moment or was it just meeting these cool kids at this moment of high impressionability?
It wasn't even that they were cool. It was about seeing freedom for the first time, seeing other kids who had a kind of freedom that I didn't yet feel, that they would just be a little wilder with what they tried to do in their art. I mean, I was trying to act, and I was really bad. I would sort of put on that acty voice that I fear I might be using a little bit in this radio show. It's like the version of the poetry voice. I come into the room. The oranges are on the table. I don't know why poets do that, but they all
because
get together and know.
That's how poetry is read.
That is how it's read. But acting for me was kind of like, add water and you become instantly pretentious. But it's more than that. I remember standing on a hill and crying a little bit because I knew I'd have to leave. And I knew that once I left, everything was going to feel different. I had that sort of terrible feeling, and I just sort of filed it away. I can't believe I didn't even write this book sooner, but I guess the reason I didn't is because this isn't a summer camp novel.
No, it's a book about adulthood given this rueful coloring by what happened when they were kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the older you get, you can't help but feel some of these feelings. But when you came of age, at least for me, my feeling is when one comes of age, remains this vivid and shockingly memorable time. And I just had access to it, and I loved thinking about it. That was another thing. I love being in the world of thinking about endless possibilities when you're, you know, an adolescent, because we, our lives get smaller, you know, although maybe yours gets bigger, Kurt, I don't know, but I've felt-
But options, all options are there when you're young and-
Yeah,
and
they really are.
At some point you face fact. I've faced the fact that I'm not going to have a career in the dance.
Well, I do not know if that is true, but the trajectory of people's lives in terms of talent is varied, and even the startlingly talented kid might not end up with a startlingly talented adult life.
Your talent did not get put on a shelf. You wrote and published your first novel while you were an undergraduate and have published new novels every couple, 3 years since. You are this big deal writer. So as you're thinking about envy and degrees of success and relative success and all that when you're writing this book, how much of your success do you think is talent? How much is ambition, tenacity? How much is luck? How much is some other X factor?
Well, publishing, as we know, has gone through so many changes and is, you know, currently going through changes. When I started publishing, I sold my first novel, you know, I was 21. I was a senior in college, as you say. I sold it for $5,000. I thought I had won the lottery. It was the most exciting thing. And I just...
But in 1981, $5,000 was a lot of money.
That was the equivalent of a million. Yes, I believe it was a million. I don't really know exactly how to break it down in terms of degree, but I've... You know, I put in time, and I think the people who've sort of stuck around and are still publishing, it's hard. It's hard to do that. I mean, we all just sort of really hung in there and kept writing. And, you know, we do live in a world, I think, that where most people don't read novels, and there is the sense that it's, you know, it has a little bit of a specialty feeling to it to be a novelist as opposed even to a nonfiction writer.
You mean like makers of wooden boats or something?
Pretty much, or Scrimshaw. It has that sort of feeling about it. And I'm proud of hanging on because it's a very, very different era from when I started. You know, when I started, a book like Housekeeping about two little girls and their aunt was the thing everybody, men and women, were talking about at dinner parties. And, you know, there are some books that do capture the cultural conversation, but they've tended to be different. And, you know, as a woman, if you're writing particularly with female characters, it's unusual that, you know, men and women want to read those books. So you have to kind of forget all of that when you're writing. You have to forget it and just write the books that you want to find on the shelf.
You brought up the subject of men and women and gender differentials in reputations. A year ago, you wrote an essay for the New York Times Book Review that made everyone talk, even if they had never read a book in their lives. You wrote that, quote, the top tier of literary fiction tends to feel peculiarly disproportionately male. Did this start out from a feeling, hey, I'm Meg Wolitzer. I've written a lot of good books. Why aren't I even more extravagantly praised than I already am?
No. I mean, it was a slow process. I'd been thinking about it forever. All of my friends who are writers and women always just sort of took it as a given that everybody understood that there were double standards in some areas of what we did. And we just tried to write the best books we could, but you would see things happening whereby books that were about women, by women, sometimes, you know, both, were really just sort of seen as something that was domestic. That idea of domestic fiction, just such a sort of insulting word.
And the sexism that causes this is so embedded in among various gatekeepers and opinion makers that it's entirely unconscious?
I just think that there are women's voices that don't get enough attention and deserve much more attention. And if you look at the era when feminism was still something that was cool to talk about, and that's the era that people like Margaret Atwood and Toni Morrison came to prominence because female experience was something that was suddenly kind of cool to think about.
Now, in terms of your recent career, your writing took a somewhat surprising turn a couple of years ago. In 2011, your YA novel, The Fingertips of Duncan Dorfman, a boy has magical powers that make him a super Scrabble champion. In The Uncoupling, published the same year, there was also magic. So what gives? Was that a coincidence?
Well, it was the year that I discovered I had magic. It was not a coincidence, but in both cases, the fantasy is incredibly light. I mean, I'm the mother of two boys, and one hated fantasy, and the other one, I always had to buy books for him with, like, gold covers and had characters named Gribbledog, you know, like knockoffs of classics, you know, sort of.
What was that name again? Gribbledog?
Gribbledog, yeah. They thought they could get away with that. And I knew that for me, living in that kind of world, that kind of fantasy was something I was never going to do. There were never going to be woodland creatures in.
But you did in two books written simultaneously veer off the realist path.
I love the idea of a little bit of something unexpected. It's sort of like I made the comparison once. It's sort of like the seal test ice cream cups my mother used to buy that had, they were supposedly a sundae, but it had like the very lightest ripple, not quite enough ripple of chocolate going through the vanilla. And that was sort of what I wanted to do.
And has it made you want to sort of drive outside your lane in different ways in future, in other books?
I really hope I can write a very different kind of book every time. I feel now, you know, when you're young and you're writing these books that are collections of sentences, well, me doing that, and not really thinking, what am I trying to do as a writer? You know, it's very innocent to do that. It's kind of like if you have a mother who supports you emotionally in your work and who never says you should go to law school. I had a mother who just only said wonderful, and I would show her my work, and it was absolutely great. But it made me think for a while, I think, that the world would be like that. And the world, of course, isn't like that. And I realized at a point when I think publishing was going through shocks, the economy was going through bad times, that it's really incumbent upon me to write books that I'm passionate about and to try things. I mean, why am I doing this otherwise?
Meg Wolitzer, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Kurt.
Meg Wolitzer's new novel, The Interestings, is in bookstores right now.